What's up, everybody? Welcome to Meet the Mets Cast. We'll be back to that name in just a second.
Very briefly.
Doug Williams here alongside Andy Martino. We're both doing video and audio. Mm-hmm. So we're here in SNY Studio 42. I believe we're in Studio 42.
We're in Studio 42, and we're off to a rousing start.
Yeah, tons of energy. The show's available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. Search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you listen to your podcasts on. Definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. Rate us, drop us a review. So the name of this show, Meet the Mets Cast, the reason I said it like I did at the top is that
you're not excited about the name.
We're not in love with it. It's not something we're attached to.
We like the logo.
The logo's great. But we thought of a couple ideas last week just in workshopping. But the thing is that if you are listening to this or watching this, we would like your ideas. The two ideas that we came to, we flushed out, which is a pun in what I'm about to say.
Watch where he's going with this, folks.
We kind of like the Flush Hour podcast. Mm-hmm. It's a take on Rush Hour, obviously. Also a take on Mets in Flushing, Queens.
And you know, podcast kids are a little edgier than what you'd call traditional media. So it's like, hey,
we're just
flush.
Two guys sitting
it's like,
around.
We're so relaxed that we're going to say the word flush around here.
So and it's a toilet pun, but who cares? Because it's podcast.
I wasn't going to go there.
The other thing that we thought of, which in terms of a digital standpoint, I think might make a little bit more sense, is just the Mets season podcast. But it's like a hashtag is the name, and it's season SZN.
So, you know, kids like hashtags.
Yeah, which I've also been told. Hashtag Mets season podcast. So those are just our two ideas. If you have any more out there and you're listening, which, first of all, awesome. Thank you. But give us some ideas.
My idea was Wilmer's Tears, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't think so.
It's cool.
All right, so let's get into some segments. We're going to do this in every show. We'll get to a topic at the end that we kind of do a little bit more long form, but we want to do some segments quickly. We're obviously just a few days away from opening day. Spring training baseball is over. So let's overreact, which is a segment we do on Baseball Night in New York, weeknight, 6 o'clock.
Which, by the way, is an excellent show
excellent
if you don't watch it.
Excellent show that we're both on. But let's overreact. This is usually when we say something that is just a statement, and instead of reacting to it rationally, we just, you know, we overdo it. So the Mets are emerging from spring training actually healthy, which means, Andy, the only meaning I can gather from it is their new medical/training regimens have fixed everything.
Do you believe that in your heart?
Let's overreact.
Look, remind me of the rules of this. I know I'm on the show a lot, but I'm not always paying attention.
You're supposed to go along with it and just kind of go.
Oh, I have to go along with that?
Yes, you have to be fun.
But the people want me to analyze and provide like my you know, context and knowledge about
something.
Okay,
fine. Just do whatever you want with it.
All this high-tech medical stuff is like the next statistical, or I shouldn't say statistical, it's the next analytical frontier in baseball. And the Mets actually, although they're run by the pioneer of analytics in baseball, and Sandy Alderson, we're a little bit behind on this. So I would say Sandy's offseason priority, other than hiring a manager, was like top. Like, he wants to leave his mark on this organization by having a much better medical stuff, whereby, like, the way he described it to me months ago was, like, even, like, players used to come in, mess around in the gym, and, like, leave, like, tinker around like anyone would at a gym. But Sandy wants their, like, levels checked every day. Like, here's what you did yesterday, so here's what you're going to do tomorrow. Make sure you're not doing anything stupid. So all this health stuff is supposed to be really significant. And I do think that it's fair to say that the fact that their injuries were not as serious as some had feared at this moment, and Conforto is even coming along faster. We're not going to directly attribute that to these changes, but it is a better rollout than the alternative. It is a little bit of data, a little bit of evidence that they are caring about this stuff. So I guess what that was is a loquacious and drawn-out way to say, yes, I'm overreacting with you. Because I do think that it's fair to say that this, because it was identified as such a big priority, is a factor.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's several players you could use as examples. Noah Syndergaard came in after his injury last season, and he's throwing just as hard as he was last spring training. You mentioned Conforto. That's another good example. He has exceeded expectations, which is not only credit to the Mets potentially in their new training system, but it's also their expectations. They did the right thing going into the season by saying May 1st, which was probably a lot later than maybe deep down they knew he could get back from.
You know, I don't even know about that, Doug. I think that I don't know that I got the sense that May 1st was deemed conservative. I honestly, when Michael Conforto's arm fell off last year, which was grotesque.
The most crazy injury. Fluke injury.
And it was, people were wondering, and to be fair, should still be wondering, is this ever going to be the same player? Is this the moment where his potential collapsed? I mean, the shoulder is kind of important when you're a guy who swings at a baseball.
Yeah, it's fairly.
So, shoulders, wrists, these are things for hitters that are really set off alarm bells, and it was such a gruesome injury. So I would say, like, it wouldn't have been ridiculous over the winter to say, yeah, we'll probably see Conforto in June. I'm made for it, sure, but you have one setback, push you back a couple weeks. Next thing you know, you're in midseason. So I just think it's been so far, and this could change at any moment, and I think it's important for us not to get ahead of ourselves, but so far, just a really, really miraculous—I shouldn't say miraculous, but well-constructed process that they've been able to follow without setbacks so far.
I also think Cespedes is an interesting example. We're going to talk about him in just a second, but the fact that he had the wrist issue, and he didn't tell the Mets about it. He hits a home run with the wrist issue, gets a cortisone shot, but now is raking. And mm-hmm. I think that that's something that Mets fans are going to say hasn't happened over the last couple of years, that a guy gets hurt, maybe there's an issue with communication, and then he actually comes back and it appears that they handled it correctly. So that's what this situation, at least for now, that all the fake baseball games are over, it seems like.
The Mets got some flack for the way that played out that you just described a few weeks ago or whenever it was. It all blends together in spring training. But when he was allowed to play while needing the shot, and the Mets were criticized, they were mad. Like, there was a lot of pushback there. Like, this is, yes, maybe that would have been the old Mets, but you think we're really dumb enough to let him play right. In spring training. I mean, give us a little credit. You think our trainers would really let him go out there? And by the way, he had a home run when he was hurt. So there was some pushback there. And the way it's borne out, yeah, he's having a good spring. So you could still argue that there have been some risks taken. You could argue that Conforto being allowed to play is a risk. And Conforto, I believe he dove for a ball at one point in a game.
Right.
So it's like that. I'm not saying that everything's being done right here, but we are saying that the results, which are the thing that matter so far, have been good.
Okay, so next segment's called and what this is a segment that we've done once on Baseball Night in New York. I'm not sure it went over well, but this is podcasting, Andy. This is different. So I'm going to say either a good or a bad thing, mm-hmm. and it's either I don't think that's a big deal, or that could be a big deal.
This is a good segment. It's a good idea. I wasn't on the day you floated the trial balloon, which, frankly, must have been why it didn't work well.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't think
you got to have the talent.
It's not
in place.
That it didn't work badly. I'm not sure it was widely applauded.
But
I didn't get like tweets like that's hysterical.
We're doing this for critical acclaim.
Right. Of course. Okay. Adrian Gonzalez's spring training: 214 average, one homer, three RBIs. Yet he's the definitive starting first baseman for the Mets. That's an issue.
Look, it would have been like a week ago, but like he's gonna play in a real game in a couple of days, so it will start to matter whether he gets hits. And they would have liked to have seen a little bit more. It's been a little better lately. The numbers have ticked up over the last even just few days of
ticked
great
up for over
league.
200.
Well, sure, but I mean, it's really about a veteran guy getting himself into shape, working on stuff, not worrying about results, having that security where he doesn't need to worry about results. So I would have said, don't worry about it. You're all overreacting. But now that he's still leaving spring with those numbers, it's a little more of a deal, especially because they have a glut of outfielders,
right.
A whole roster situation
Jay
that we'll get into later.
Space.
My understanding is he'll have till about May 1st-ish to show that he can play, which is not conservative. That's fairly soon.
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
Dom Smith came into the spring supposedly in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to fight for the job. He was going to fight with Adrian Gonzalez, and it was going to be a competition.
Physically, with their
shirts
off.
They were going to battle.
Square off.
His wasted spring training, that's concerning.
The only thing that mattered was him showing up late to that meeting because it obviously rankled
Optics.
The manager. Callaway was like, it was shocking, which Mickey's like whole thing is to be nice a lot, so that stuck out. But I just don't see, that's only a big deal if you thought that Dominic Smith had a realistic chance to be the Mets' first baseman, and I feel confident
they
he didn't.
They knew going in.
Yeah, so I mean, if he had play, anything can happen. Adrian Gonzalez had a bad spring. If Smith had hit 500, then maybe we're having a conversation. But I just don't think that was ever a real competition. And I also don't think that Smith showed anything late last year that would make you want him on this team. So I just don't understand.
No, he showed some power, and also Mets, I mean, any fans love prospects. They want to see the guys that are homegrown talent. And
I understand that, but that's a fallacy of just things are a blank canvas that you can project your hopes and dreams on.
Well, I'm just saying, I think Mets fans would have gotten more appreciation out of a good Dom Smith than a good Adrian Gonzalez.
Sure, but that's...
I think
you're absolutely right about that, but I don't understand why a fan wouldn't want to like some production.
No,
I know how much fans like to buy into their prospects, and that's a whole thing. The other thing I will say to this point is that I think that Smith not being on the field counterintuitively saved the Mets some hassle because they didn't have to deal with this conversation. They didn't have to deal with this storyline. It would have been really inconvenient for the Mets had the performance, Smith had been great and Gonzalez had been terrible. Because then they would have had to deal with these questions, this storyline. Look, they'd always rather have their player be good than bad, but I'm just saying there's a whole thing that didn't have to happen, and a conversation didn't have to happen because he couldn't get himself out there.
Okay, last error. Yoenis Cespedes hitting 6 spring training homers. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
All right.
I mean, if he hadn't played well with the wrist thing, we'd be having a negative conversation about him. So,
okay, time for bold predictions. I think this is going to be a segment that we only do once, which is right now, because we have an entire season to predict.
One could predict a week at a time.
I will start. We're each going to give 2. My first one is that Brandon Nimmo's emergence forces Adrian Gonzalez off the roster. The way I see this working is pretty simple. Mm-hmm. I think Brandon Nimmo, from what I've seen this spring, from what I saw last year, he's got a solid swing. He's got a very good on-base percentage. He's clearly working very hard to learn how to play center field. I'm not sure he'll actually play center. I think that'll be Conforto once he comes back.
Oh, yeah.
But I think Brandon Nimmo has surprised a lot of Mets fans and, frankly, probably is Sandy Alderson's sitting at home thinking, this is the guy that I drafted. I knew he could turn into this player. Lots of people doubted this pick because, you know, he's from Wyoming, hasn't been playing baseball for all that long. But I've seen some promise, and I think Adrian Gonzalez, if Andy, like you said, by May 1st, he's hitting 230, he's got a little bit of pop, but he's clearly not the player he once was. I think Nimmo goes to the outfield, plays every day, and you bring Jay Bruce over to the first base. So that's my first bold prediction. What do you think of it?
I think that I wasn't listening. Could you do it again? No, I'm kidding. I think that if he's hitting 230 with some pop, Adrian Gonzalez, he's on the team. If he's hitting 180 with no pop, that's when we have the conversation. That's my only... I agree with your whole line of reasoning. That's the only thing that stuck out to me is that's... You'll take two... I mean, they just gave Todd Frazier a lot of money. He's not a 230 hitter anymore. So I do think that that's the... I think you're overestimating just a little bit how good or not good Gonzalez has to be to cost himself a job.
Yeah, I mean, I just am going off of what I saw in spring training and last year with the Dodgers. Yeah. I'm unimpressed. So we'll see if that changes. My second one would be the Mets bullpen turns out to be the Achilles heel of the team. There's really one guy that makes me say this, and I don't like to be saying it, and I hope I'm wrong because he seems like a great guy, and he's a great guy in that clubhouse. But A.J. Ramos, when he came to the Mets last year, struggled with his control. He's only throwing like 90 to 92 miles an hour. I know he's got some movement on the breaking ball, but I'm a little cognizant and wary of the fact that he's one of the key pieces in that bullpen and that Jerry Blevins is going to have so many innings on his arm. Jay Reese-Familia is coming off of questionable at best season. I'm just a little concerned what that could be. You only have one lefty, and it's Jerry Blevins, and you want to use him in the 7th and 8th innings. So whether that means Fernando Abad comes up and helps out, you're going to need and want another lefty in that bullpen. I'm just not sure how that's going to end up shaking out. Mm. So I'm a little bit concerned. I think you're going to miss Addison Reed like you did at the end of last year. So I think the bullpen's going to be a problem. And if the Mets are in contention, they're going to go out and sign another arm. What do you think?
I think the lefty situation is definitely a concern. And, you know, by the way, obviously you'd rather have Blevins than Josh Edgen, but Josh Edgen's had a really nice spring with Baltimore where
he's
throwing
the ball
well.
Minor league
deal.
Yeah.
So you want more than one lefty. I agree with you about Blevins. Blevins is been very good for the Mets, but he was a scrap heap guy. They got him for Matt Dendecker, for God's sake. I mean, this is not somebody who is incapable of having a down year.
Right.
And Washington was giving him away a couple years ago. So, there's no evidence that Blevins is in a decline. Sure, you don't guarantee that's going to be good. I'm going to have something to say about Familia myself along those lines in a second. And Ramos, like, I like that deal.
Elite the
deal. Curveball,
yeah.
As you said. I think it's certainly not the kind of lockdown bullpen that you could just count on. It's certainly not the bullpen that some other teams have. So, that could be an area of need. I don't I was not in favor of them bringing back Addison Reed because I think we saw what he did.
You would rather have Anthony Swarzak than Addison Reed?
I like for the money, yeah, for what it allowed them to do. I thought I liked that signing.
I don't know who Anthony Swarzak is because at one point in his career he's a journeyman reliever, and then at another point he's making all this money.
Well, he made a very specific adjustment where he was throwing his fastball more and in different ways, where he really did transform himself meaningfully in a way where his trending upward happened after that. So I do like that signing for the value. The other thing about Addison Reed is I know it's hard to say that that's not a good guy to have in your bullpen because he was excellent for them for the years that he was here, but then I watched him with the Red Sox in high leverage situations late in the season and in the postseason, and he was terrible. And that's not necessarily a guy who I would want to have. If I feel like I have a playoff caliber team, I want a different setup guy than Addison Reed. So that didn't bother me. But I agree with your overall point about the bullpen not being a sure thing.
Bold prediction number one, what is it?
I don't know. Can I see the paper?
Yeah, sure.
I said the best seasons of Familia's career are behind him. That's not nice of me.
Well, no wonder you agree with my bullpen point.
Yeah,
that's
but
a serious
why
problem.
Why would I say that about a nice guy who, I mean, it just was not nice of me to say and predict bad for him. It's the beginning of the season. Hope springs eternal. How dare I? Number two was Jose Reyes will play more than 50 games at shortstop. I don't know. You guys think that through at home. It's a troll job by me.
You think it's a troll job by you?
I don't know.
Well, here's why I think it's interesting.
I know what's going to happen.
You saying Reyes is going to play 50 games at shortstop means that there's 50 games that Ahmed Rosario's not playing shortstop. That's why I went to journalism school, and those are the kind of things that I can figure out because of that education.
Uh-huh.
Where's Rosario going to be?
I don't know.
I really thought your bold predictions.
No, what has to do with Rosario? So where I was going with that, which is half trolley and half, like, realistic based on what I've seen from Ahmed Rosario, what people have told me about what they've seen from Ahmed Rosario, is that that's no sure thing as your everyday shortstop, as a guy who's going to be good. It's a guy who's going to hit enough this year to stick at that position. So I said Reyes because obviously that'd be most likely the guy they would go to next. So I don't think Rosario's a sure thing.
Okay.
I'm really, really glad for the Mets' sake that they got Adrian Gonzalez because it would have been a joke to go into the season with rookies at shortstop and first base. The offseason when it was going to be Smith and Rosario, a team that takes itself seriously cannot do that with those two players. So that's why I liked that they got Gonzalez. You could split hairs over whether it should have been a Mark Reynolds or an Adam Lind, but I like them getting a veteran at that position. So, yes, my slight troll job, slight based in reality pick is based on a lack of faith in Ahmed Rosario.
Okay, so this segment, the last one we're going to do, well, second to last, my Saturday night's coming up. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about our social
That'll be fun.
In a second. Let's dig deeper. And this is just the segment I guess we're going to talk about a little bit longer than the rest of them. There's nothing really scientific about that, but...
What if the conversation wraps up organically
quickly
sooner?
That's fine.
Then we have to stretch? Yes.
To vamp?
Yeah.
No, I don't think we have to do that because that's not entertaining.
Okay.
Zach Wheeler sent to AAA. And I thought actually that the Mets had such a good weekend because Zach Wheeler gets sent to AAA, but not only does he react well to it and get very well quoted after it as compared to when they signed Vargas. Dave Island comes out, and I wish that there was some way that we could have a weekly segment with Dave Island because his quotes are refreshingly honest as well. Both of them basically said, this guy has not been good enough to make the rotation, and he didn't make it. There are some things he has to work on. Seth Lugo made it because he's been good in spring training, which I'm sorry, but as someone who's watching, I want to watch spring training for a reason. I want whoever performs well.
The actual positional competition.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And whoever performs well to get rewarded for it. That's what happened here. Do you think Zach Wheeler getting sent to AAA is any grand message or the columns that are being written? Like, is he going to be a guy that we reference with Kerry Wood and Mark Pryor down the
line? Oh, he hasn't accomplished anything close to those
exactly,
guys
but yeah. I'm talking about, you know, maybe a better comparison would be Josh Johnson, someone like that. Is he going to be that, or is this just, for the moment, the right baseball decision?
I think there's a lot going on here, both big and small, with this. This is a fascinating topic, actually. There's so much. Actually, it's hard to know where to begin. I mean, with the Wheeler thing, make sure we talk about Dave Island and why that was important as a broader message, too. But just as Zach Wheeler, like, going back on that trajectory, I remember I was the beat writer for the Daily News when the Mets traded Carlos Beltran in 2011 for Zach Wheeler. A couple things about that. Number one, The Mets messed up that relationship with Carlos Beltran because they had to trade him. There was no way he was coming back as a free agent. But had it been a good relationship between player and team, that's a player who was productive for many, many more years as a Cardinal, as a Yankee, and then he was a great leader for the Houston Astros kind of on his way out of the league as they won the World Series. So trading Beltran was inevitable at that time, but it shouldn't have been. That's one point to make, broad franchise kind of point. The other point alludes back to the prospect conversation we were just having. I remember so clearly how excited the fan base was when the Mets acquired Zach Wheeler. And although I totally get it, they had nothing to be excited about for a few years prior to that, other than Jerry Manuel and Omar Minaya's regime coming to an end, firings, last place finishes, like a lot of uninspired baseball. So getting a prospect was nice at that time for fans of something to look at. But then assuming that he's going to be part of the solution. And then I remember what I thought was really problematic. Several years later, there's a doubleheader in Atlanta where Wheeler made his major league debut. Harvey pitched the day game. Wheeler pitched the nightcap. And it was billed as this huge thing. And it's like, Wheeler hasn't accomplished anything yet. Wheeler may never be anything. So to, like, think that this is a big deal before anything actually happens is really emblematic to me, Doug, of the problem with the way people in this game regard prospects. It's nothing until it is productive at the big league level. Getting excited over these trades where you get rid of proven big leaguers for a guy in single A or double A, that whole mentality, I think, is problematic. And Wheeler, to me, is a real lesson in that. He's also a lesson in how you got to cut bait with guys a lot faster. There were Mets people pushing me to write, and I did, as early as, when did he debut? I think it was 2013. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was 2013. At the end of that season, I was being encouraged by sources who I trusted that I should be writing columns that they should trade Wheeler because they didn't like a lot about him at that point. Durability, attitude, even, things like that. So Sandy Alderson was never willing to trade him. So that's the big picture on Wheeler.
Looking up Wheeler's.
This is a podcast. It's informal. Kids like it. You can Google stuff on the air. Is that what you're demonstrating right
now? Yeah. It's okay. Just like they're on their phones. We
exactly.
Ours. 2013, he debuted. And the one thing that I would say to your second point is that you say that Wheeler hasn't accomplished anything, and in the grand scheme of things, he hasn't. But this isn't Rafael Montero. This isn't a guy that the Mets keep trying to call up, and he flames out. I mean,
if you look at
his 2014 season before Tommy John, he was Zach Wheeler. He was going five innings and throwing 110 pitches.
Right.
But he finished with 11 wins and a 3.54 ERA.
Yeah, no, that's...
So, like, that is enough when you see the radar gun and you see okay stats and you see a guy that young to think, this guy could turn into something.
But people were assuming that he was going to be in some kind of... I know this sounds crazy now, but the word Verlander... And I actually remember this. And this is a good, like, little inside... The inside baseball thing about how this can happen. I was in a press box one day, I think it was Atlanta, I'm not positive, early, mid-afternoon, like way before the game, and a scout came walking through, three or four writers there, and the scout's going, I like Wheeler. I think he reminds me of Verlander. He dropped the Verlander on it. This is when Wheeler was in double or triple A. And a couple writers tweeted the quote. And, you know, that's our response. I'm sitting here talking about fans. That's the media's responsibility to provide a little more context there, because if a fan follows me on Twitter and sees that, they're going to get excited. But there's so much about Wheeler that wasn't going to be Justin Verlander that probably could have been detected even then. But the hype just happens that way. And yeah, you're right. He had a solid year, and it was never smooth. It was always a lot of pitches and not enough innings. But I think the point here is about expectations. And it's the same conversation with a Greg Bird, who, through no fault of his own, is having all these foot problems and might never fulfill his potential with the Yankees. It's just like, let's wait. And then you have other players who are not heralded prospects who end up filling out these big league rosters and being really productive. So I'm just saying these prospect lists.
But I think it's to your point, the last point, that you guys, sometimes we have players that are unheralded prospects and then they turn into huge players. And then we always, there's a little bit of distrust because, like, a J.D. Martinez, maybe he makes $20 more million on the contract if he had always been a superstar.
Sure.
But there's this little, like, well, what did he do to turn into that superstar? At least that's my opinion.
Oh,
so
sure.
I think that's a good conversation with Zach Wheeler, something to monitor with this rotation as we move forward in the season. All right, before we go, we're going to do this thing.
No, wait. Dave Island. You didn't remind me as you were supposed to.
Sorry. What do you mean I was supposed
to? Quick point. Well, the people at home probably remember that I said, let's make sure we talk about the Dave Island point before we move on from this.
Sorry.
No, I think this is a positive for the Mets, and it's really relevant to how they're going to act to these pitchers going forward, just because Dan Worthen was a beloved figure in this organization for a long time. He was such a player's guy. They loved this guy. And if you're looking at a group that acts as if they've accomplished a lot when they've accomplished a moderate amount, yeah. It's the Mets rotation. And they were looking for someone to come in there and give some more tough love. So the way that Dave Island talked about Zach Wheeler is a major indication of the way that the Mets want the tone to shift around their young players.
Okay. Very good stuff.
Thank you.
Happy to have Dave Island here.
Yeah. It's a good fit.
It's an interesting fit with the city and with the media and his honesty with this rotation, mm-hmm. too. Okay, segment we're going to do at the end of each show, My Saturday Night. Now, what are you? You're in your 50s now?
53.
Now, anyway, I'm 27 years old. I live in Manhattan.
I'm 37.
Andy has a wife and a young son named
Henry.
Live
in the suburbs.
5 years old. You live mm-hmm. in the suburbs. So our lives are very different, but Andy has been hammering me this past couple weeks for, like, living some old, boring life. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to do the segment called My Saturday Night. It's not going to be a long thing. We want to say what we did on Saturday night. You start.
I went to a birthday party at someone's house. The uncool part about it is it was a 50th birthday party. But the cool part about it is there was a live band, there was an open bar, and it was fully catered. And
live band for a 50th birthday party. Were any of the people in the band wearing, like, pleated khakis? Was it that?
No, it was a bluegrass shirts? Band. So it was, like, it had a hipster bent to that. It was like the people that hosted the party liked bluegrass, but there may have been a slight ironic nod to, hey, it's a bluegrass band.
I did say that your town in Jersey is filled with Brooklynites.
That's right. I used to live in Greenpoint, Williamsburg, and there is a feeling of hipster irony that has now carried over to the nearby suburbs because none of us can afford homes in the city. That's neither here nor there. But I think I had I had three martinis.
You were drinking. What a fascinating sounding party.
Oh, listen to this, too. The first two martinis were strong enough where when I wanted the third, the bartender was, like, missing. He was somewhere else. So I reached over the bar and made myself one in the thing.
That is such
a pretty cool night.
That's such a you thing to do because you probably left the place a mess, like, pouring vodka.
No, he came back mid-pour and he was not happy.
Okay, my Saturday night, it started in the evening hours. I went over to visit my friends in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Gowanus.
Okay, well, that's kind of hip.
Yeah, it was
hip. That's more than I thought you were going to bring to this.
Yeah, and then I went out to dinner. We got Chinese food at a very simple, regular, standard Chinese food place in Brooklyn Heights.
Not hip. Mm-hmm.
Then I took a cab home, and I went to bed.
What time were you asleep on Saturday night?
Usually 1:30 a.m.
Okay, well, you got me beat there. I was sleeping by 11:30.
Yeah.
We had to relieve the babysitter.
Even with the live.
So there are limits to my coolness.
All right, so this has been the Meet the Mets cast with Doug Williams and Andy Martino. I'm not sure it'll be Meet the Mets cast
Wilmer's
in
Tears.
One week from now. It could be anything. We'd like your suggestions. But don't forget, either way, this show's available as part of the SNY.TV Mets podcast feed. Search for SNY Mets in the iPhone podcast app or, frankly, whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. That's not our business. Definitely subscribe to the feed if you haven't already. Rate us, drop us a review. You can now drop us a review. I told you to drop a review at the beginning of the podcast, which wouldn't make any sense because it's the first one we're doing. You don't know how we are.
Well, you take one look at us and you're like, this is going to be good.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you next week after the regular season is officially underway. See ya.
Bye.